Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls, and I apologize for the delay in getting the podcast out. I know it's been a while. Was on the big red bus last week, so at least you got a little bit of fix if you were just dying to hear my voice or a podcast, but the Bulls Beat is back today. I wanted to wait till after the lottery and then just kind of didn't have time until the weekend, so here we are. And so, as we know by now, and we've probably already adjusted in our heads and gotten over the disappointment, the Bulls actually fell from 6th to 7th. Is actually the second most likely scenario that could happen, and a fairly high chance is around, 33% chance, so 1-3. So disappointing for Bulls fans, and I think the big difference by falling from 6th to 7 is that it greatly increases the odds that the Bulls make a conservative pick at number 7, and that they don't take one of these guys who are viewed as, the high upside prospects. So I'm going to discuss a couple things, I think, in general. And that is, first, I think people put maybe 7 guys in this high upside prospect range. And I think there are some other guys that are deeper in the draft that are actually higher. And so of the 7, though, I think you look at DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic, Marvin Bagley, Jaren Jackson Jr., Trae Young, Mo Bamba, and Michael Porter Jr. So I think those are the 7 upside prospects. Now, at 6, you would have 2 of those prospects sitting there for you. And then the next 2 prospects I think most people have are Wendell Carter Jr. and Mikal Bridges. And so of those guys, they're viewed as maybe safer prospects with a little bit lower ceilings. And so if the Bulls had 2 high upside prospects left, there's a much greater chance that they would like one of them. And I think there's plenty to like about Wendell Carter Jr. There's plenty to like about Mikal Bridges. But if you had 2 of these high upside prospects, you probably would like one. Now, there's plenty of things to be concerned about with Trae Young. There's some things to be concerned about Mo Bamba. There's plenty to be concerned about with Michael Porter Jr. I think one of those 3 guys is going to be the guy that falls to 7. And so here's the deal. If you're the Bulls and say Michael Porter Jr. is on the board and you look at his surgery records and his health profile, and you bring him in for a workout and you don't feel good about his health and whether he'll be able to stay healthy, you got to pass on him, right? I mean, you got to pass. You can't take a guy that you feel like, nope, this guy's just going to be a parade of injuries his whole career. This doesn't check out at all. There's big concerns here. We talk to doctors. This isn't the thing. Or he comes in, doesn't look that athletic, or comes in and can't shoot the ball or whatever, right? Like, just something happens and you're like, nope, this just isn't the guy. Because there's a good chance that Michael Porter is not the guy, right? I mean, I know we look at his high school RSCI rating and we think, wow, he probably should be really good. But there are guys who come into college as one of the top rated guys and then they fall and they don't end up being good players. It's not like a guarantee that you are great at 18 against high school players that you're going to be great in the NBA. It just isn't. So Michael Porter certainly has the pedigree at that level to think, yeah, I'd be willing to take a chance on this guy. He's really good. If it was not the one and done era and it was the high school era, Michael Porter Jr. might have been the number one pick in the draft. So you can make this case that you want him, but now if something happens, you're like, no, I can't take a chance on this guy. I've got more evidence on these other guys and the workout didn't go well. Then you have to pass on Porter and you have to take then one of these other guys, one of these safer picks. Now, if you had 1 pick earlier, and maybe you also feel that way about Porter still. Maybe you're like, yep, nope, it's not Porter. But now I've looked at Trae Young, and seeing Trae Young, I'm like, nope, this guy is the real deal. He is going to be amazing. This is Steph Curry 2.0. Now you can take him. Or you look at Mo Bamba, and you're like, yeah, there's some stuff to work on offensively here, but boy, his length, athleticism, defense, and everything else is just going to get it done. We're going to take him. And now it could be that Trae Young falls to you or Mo Bamba falls to you. I think it'll probably be Young or Porter, to be honest. But just to say, for example, one of those guys fall you. And then you get Mo Bamba and you're like, nah, I don't like this. This offense is too far apart. We need a guy with who can maybe carry us offensively. He's got great length and all this other stuff. But I'm not sure that he's really going to be able to make his mark on the other side of the ball. And I'm not sure his defense is good enough to warrant a pick this high, and I don't want him. Or Trae Young, this guy is too small. Even though he shoots really great, he's just not going to translate to the NBA. You know, if you have a question on one of these guys, you still have to pass and then say, hey, Mikal Bridges, Wendell Carter Jr., these are fantastic prospects. I'm going to take one of them instead. But if you have two on the board, there's a much better chance that you're going to like one of them, right? That you're going to say, one of these two guys I feel really confident will overcome his flaws, and you'll take that leap on, you know, a higher ceilinged player. Now, I'll also add in our view as fans of where ceilings are is also, I don't know, kind of all over the board. I don't think many people had Donovan Mitchell's ceiling as best player in the draft, which right now maybe he is. You know, Jason Tatum still, I think, may end up being the best player in the draft. But, you know, we don't necessarily feel ceilings out correctly. I don't think people thought Lauri Markkanen, when he was drafted, had a super high ceiling. And now we kind of feel like he probably does. I think we've been talking about Lauri like he's probably, you know, the third pick in the draft behind Tatum and Mitchell. Maybe the third best player. There's a couple other guys who could still pass him, but he was a really good pick, and his ceiling, after seeing him in the NBA for a year, certainly feels a lot higher than it did when we drafted him. So we don't want to get too hung up on what we view ceilings are sometimes, because the draft pundits are wrong all the time. What was Jimmy Butler's ceiling when we drafted him? Anyone was thinking, like, this guy's going to be a star in the league. So it can be difficult to really project out a player's ceiling. So I don't want to get so caught up on that, but you do have to kind of roll with the odds. Mikal Bridges, who's been in school for 3 years, clearly he's had a lot of time to develop. And because of that, you know, you kind of think, yeah, he should be further ahead, and he is further ahead. And so, you know, it's okay, but it does mean a guy who's 19 and had a similar season would be way more valuable. I don't know that there is anyone who's 19 and had a similar season, so it's not exactly a one-to-one comparison. You know, Mikal Bridges really kind of looks like he can do a bit of everything. I'll caution people about one other thing, is people will look at Mikal Bridges and they'll say, well, if we compare his freshman year to some other guy's freshman year, you know, Mikal Bridges was way worse as a freshman than Trae Young was as a freshman. Well, it's not really an adequate comparison, right? Because lots of guys were comparable to Mikal Bridges in his freshman year. Almost none of them will go on to do what he did in his junior year if they played 3 years in school. And if they had his kind of freshman year, they would definitely not be going out for the draft. So, and they would have that opportunity. Not many guys make that transition. So the fact that Mikal Bridges did does show you that he improved. So you do have to look at where he is now. You can't just say, well, I'm going to compare their two freshman years. It's not really an adequate comparison, because most players aren't going to make that type of growth. And it does show that maybe, you know, Mikal Bridges, yeah, he obviously works really hard and tries to improve his game. So we'll see what he can do in the future. And I do think in that sense, you do have to just think like, hey, this is where he's at as a junior. He's going to definitely have a little bit less upside in terms of continual improvement going forward just because of his years of age. But you do have to look at his total package right now. And so, to me, I think the four guys the Bulls will be looking at will be Trae Young, Porter Jr., Mikal Bridges, and Wendell Carter. I think it'll be one of those four. Clearly, one of those guys, at least, likely only one, but likely one of those guys will be off the board. To me, I don't think I want Trae Young. It's hard to say, because I look at his offensive game and you feel like, wow, this guy really can shoot the ball. He can really do a lot of exciting things. You know, he really was the main guy in his team. Is he the next Steph Curry? You know, I don't think that that's likely. So just because Steph Curry proved it's possible doesn't mean someone else is going to come along and do the same thing. You know, when you look at a guy who's a unicorn and the next guy comes along that's kind of similar, I don't think you just can say, yep, he's the next guy. So to me, if Trae Young is the upside guy that's left there, I'm probably going to pass. Michael Porter Jr. is interesting, because I think as a fan, you really can't judge him at all. I mean, you really can't. You can judge what you think your opinion is of him by saying, yeah, I want to go after this guy who has potential to be the best prospect in the draft. I want the guy who has this kind of freak size as a potential small forward and, you know, amazing shooting ability. I can see how this translates into, you know, elite player in the NBA, and I want that skill set. And of course, we all want that, right? Like, every team would want that. So it's not whether or not you want that skill set, because we all want it. And if he's going to bring it, then he's not going to be available, right? Like, if everyone was confident that Michael Porter could do what he was expected to do out of high school and that he would stay healthy, he's like the number one or number two pick in the draft. But we aren't confident of that. In fact, we're so not confident of that that we think there's a good chance he's going to fall to number seven. Now, that may not end up being the case, right? He may go through the workouts with teams, give them medical information, and that may not end up being the case. It'll be interesting to see where he falls. He could easily have a team fall in love with him higher up in the draft and go earlier. I don't think that would shock anyone if it happens. But what it really just comes down to is we have to acknowledge as fans, we don't get to see whatever his medical information is. We don't really get to gauge how much risk around that we feel there is. All we get to do is take a look at him and say, if it works out, it sure sounds great. But we have a really hard time guessing whether it'll work out, whether he's really healthy or not. We're not going to see the private workouts he has with the team. We're not going to get to gauge whether he looks athletic and that type of stuff. So I think in that sense, Porter Jr. is a guy that if your team passes on him, you have to think they either did their homework or Porter refused to work out for them, in which case I think you just have to pass because it's too scary. You know, and if they take him, you have to think, yep, they did their homework. This guy is going to be good. You know, so to me, if the Bulls take Porter, I'll be excited because I think they'll have made a good assessment. If they pass on Porter, I'll also feel like that's okay. They probably assessed this and said, this isn't the risk we want to take. And you really got to look at this from a long-term risk perspective. If you remember Brandon Roy going into the Wayback Machine, you know, for a while when Brandon Roy was selected, this was just an amazing pick. And maybe if you played your cards just right, it was an amazing pick. But the knock on Brandon Roy coming out of college was he had a bunch of knee problems and people didn't think he'd hold up. And lo and behold, after having some really great seasons for the Portland Trail Blazers, he signs a massive extension and then basically never plays like meaningfully good basketball for any stretch of time again in his career. And the Blazers got screwed with this dude for like forever on this big contract, you know, who just could never stay healthy. And so when you're looking at Porter Jr.'s injuries, it's not like, you know, he may even have two or three great years, but is this guy going to hold up for a decade? You know, is this guy going to hold up? You know, because once you get to year four, if he's amazing, you're signing him to this max deal. Now you have to hope he holds up for five more seasons or he's killing you. You know, so really, even though it sounds crazy, you're like, wow, who cares? If he's great for 5 years, that's still good. Well, actually, that's kind of like the worst case scenario because you will have signed him after year four for this huge deal, and now you're just going to eat it for 5 years. So you really have to look at a guy like that and say, is he going to hold up for the long term if you draft him? And, you know, they'll make that decision one way or the other if he's available. They'll have had that information, look at the chance to guess whether they think that's possible or not. So now we'll get to the two guys, and I think if you were going to bet on what the Bulls would do, you'd probably bet, right, that they're going to take one of these other guys. And so, I mean, maybe not, but they've generally been a pretty conservative front office. I think that's one of the things people say about them that can be negative or positive. They don't take big risks often. I don't think that's necessarily true entirely. I do think that's the reputation. I don't think it's necessarily true. They took a big risk on Tyrus Thomas. And I guess if we're going back to 2006, the last time they took a big risk, then that is maybe a statement of something. They took a risk on like Marquise Teague. So I do think they do take risks on guys that they feel the risk is worthwhile. I do think they will take chances on guys here and there. So we'll see. But it wouldn't surprise anyone if they take one of these guys who seems like a safe bet, right? Not going to surprise anyone. So if we're looking at Mikal Bridges and Wendell Carter Jr., you know, watching Bridges, the only thing you don't like is that he's a junior. And that's a big thing to not have two extra years of development. It is, right? But watching him, Mikal Bridges really has a whole lot to like. You know, he's a very athletic, great defender, good shooter, you know, really projects out into a great 3-and-D player plus a little extra, right? Like, he's not a guy who's just going to shoot threes and play defense. I mean, he can drive. He can maybe not take guys off the dribble, but he's going to be able to cut to the basket. He's going to be able to finish alley-oops. You know, he's a guy who can make plays with his athleticism at the rim. You know, he's definitely going to be give you that hustle player thing. You know, kind of like a David Nwaba with a great three-point shot. And if you think about that, that's a pretty exciting player. Like, a guy who's going to get you, you know, some offensive rebounds. He's going to get you like 10-point hustle points a game, maybe 8 hustle points a game. Plus, he'll then knock down like 2 or 3 threes a game. You know, it's really easy to see how Mikal Bridges can be like a 15-point scorer on really high efficiency without requiring the ball in his hands a lot. And that's a very versatile player. You can plug into any lineup. A guy who's going to help significantly any team, especially because he's also bringing defense on the other end. He's a guy who's going to help your team a lot. I just think he's going to help you a lot. He's going to be a guy who really comes in and does a lot for your team for as long as he's there. And so in that perspective, yeah, I think you can easily make the case. You're picking at 7 here, and we're arguing that this guy might not be a superstar. But it's easy to make the case that Mikal Bridges is going to be Luol Deng with a three-point shot, like that type of player. You know, a guy who's really a glue player, does all the little things, you know, helps you in so many ways, can defend like almost anyone on the floor, and can then give you, you know, a good amount of offense, but won't require the ball a whole lot. There's a real case to be made that that's an extremely valuable player. If you get that player at number 7, you're happy with that. In a normal draft, I think you're ecstatic with that, actually. You know, this is a guy who, you know, Luol Deng was a 2-time All-Star, but I think he's like one of the worst 2-time All-Stars ever, which is like sort of a weird insult or compliment, you know, because you still have to be great to even be the worst 2-time All-Star ever, right? You know, he's not the worst. There's a couple guys in the era where they had to have explicit centers who were pretty bad. But he was kind of like a guy who was like a borderline, a guy who should have always been like 2 or 3 spots away. You know, if there's like 20 All-Stars, I forget how many it is, if it's 20, 24, I think they have 10-man rosters off the top of my head, but no, I'm not so certain going live. But, you know, he's a guy who's probably like in his time, maybe the 30th best player in the league or something like that, you know, like at his peak. He's probably around, you know, he's around the 30th best player. Like, he'd be the best player on a really bad team. Or, you know, a couple teams always have multiple guys in the top 30. So, you know, he was a very good player. He was a very good player, but he wasn't a great player. And I think that's what you would get with Mikal Bridges. You get a very good player, but you're probably not going to get a great player. You still have some chance at a great player, for sure. If Mikal Bridges, tightens up his handle a little bit and learns to take people off the dribble, he definitely has the athleticism. He definitely has the range. You could easily see the path to how he could become an elite player. It's just that usually at this age level, if that was going to happen, you would expect to see some of those ball handling skills already present. You'd have expected to have seen some of this develop, and it hasn't yet. So while it's as you look at it and you say there's this one skill he kind of needs to improve, and then he could really become an elite player, so I think there's a good chance of that. I mean, I do think there's just kind of like this one skill, but it's maybe not so likely he improves it. But he definitely still has a chance, and that's why I say you can't get too hung up on what you perceive as a guy's ceiling. And so if the Bulls get Mikal Bridges, I'm not going to complain, because I think he'll be an excellent player for the Bulls. I think he'll be very good at a floor, and I still think he has some ceiling to be great, just a little bit less likely than some of these other guys. And that brings me into Wendell Carter. And Wendell Carter, I think, is an interesting guy. Because coming into this season, Wendell Carter was the 4th highest rated prospect in high school. So this was a guy coming in with a decent amount of hype. He ended up with a 9'1" standing reach. You know, that's a pretty tall standing reach, but it's like teeny by this draft class. I mean, like, it's funny when you go look at the history, which you can do on NBA.com. If you go look at the history of guys, like 9'1" would usually be like among the better guys in terms of the prospects that are like legitimate. There'll always be a couple guys who have freaky standing reach, but like usually they're not, you know, very good. This class is interesting. There's like a bunch of guys have like super high standing reach. He's like really low down. But 9'1", that's like Tyson Chandler level It's like bigger than Anthony Davis. So it's good. So he's got legit size to be center. He's got legit body already to play center. This is a guy who can plug in and play center right away. And so that's great. He was number four prospect. He's got a well-rounded game already. He can shoot. He's got different post moves. He's not a tremendous athlete, but it's not like he's an at-the-rim or below-the-rim player. I mean, he's still a decent athlete. You know, he can finish lobs for you. He dunks. He's not like like Michael Beasley or something where, you know, he was kind of like a power forward in college, but it was kind of playing at the rim rather than above the rim. You know, he does play above the rim. And so Wendell Carter Jr. is a guy who's like, his impact at Duke statistically wasn't super huge, but he scored a good amount. He blocked a good amount of shots. You know, he did everything pretty well, but he just didn't have this amazing season. But when you look at his overall game, you're like, everything is kind of there. He's a guy who looks like he can be a good defensive player. He's got all the offensive well-roundedness you need. You know, to me, this is a guy who could be Al Horford. He's got the pedigree of a guy who was a highly ranked prospect. And, you know, I think he's just kind of overlooked because of Marvin Bagley being at Duke. Maybe because Duke didn't finish quite as well in the tournament as people thought they might. They had a pretty good run. But he didn't have as big an impact as you thought he could. And that could either be the system, the scheme, you know, the way Duke played. But he's a guy who has kind of like all these things. I'm not sure why people don't look at Wendell Carter as a guy who has big upside. You know, when I look at him compared to Mo Bamba, clearly, you know, he's got 6 inches less reach. Maybe lesser of an athlete, but dramatically more well-refined in terms of his game on both ends of the court, in my opinion. You know, a guy who probably day one is going to give you more defense, certainly can give you much more offense, more consistent offense in different ways. And, you know, I kind of get the idea of like, hey, Mo Bamba's got this body that's better, and we're going to hope his skill set grows in such a way that's better. But I do think people like look at this and they maybe don't give Wendell Carter enough credit. I think that he would also be a tremendous pick. It would be very solid. And so I guess once I've said that, I've kind of said, any guy the Bulls pick, I think I'm okay with. You know, I think I'm okay with. You know, there's guys who maybe off the cuff I think are better than other guys who I'd be more excited about, you know, in terms of Bridges, Carter, or say Porter, if those are the three, no matter whom they take, you know, I think I'm going to be okay with that selection and think, yeah, you know, that's okay. I can understand the case for each of these guys. And so I will trust in the front office this year. Because last year when they took Lauri Markkanen, I was not so happy about it. I was like, what the hell is going on here? This is a terrible idea. And so at this point, I'm going to just do what I try to do every year and say, the people making the pick know more than I do. And so whatever pick they take, probably a good idea, especially given their history in the draft. They've done a great job. That said, since everyone wants a selection and wants to talk about who their guy is, if it's Porter and it's Carter and it's Bridges, I think I would roll with Wendell Carter Jr. And I say that only because I can't really judge Porter. So, you know, it's like I love the upside, but if he actually falls all the way to 7, to me, that makes me feel like there are pretty significant red flags that have been unveiled by everyone else. And Wendell Carter Jr. and Mikal Bridges are both fantastic players. We're going to be great players for your team and help you win basketball games for a long time. And while you can get a guy who is going to, you know, positively impact winning for you, for sure, and be a good guy who's going to help you win, I think at that point you don't take a flyer on a guy who could easily flame out and not do absolutely anything for you. And I just kind of feel like if he's there, there's probably a greater chance. Though if the Bulls take him, I will then say, hey, they've done their research, they know what they're doing, and I'll be excited for Michael Porter Jr. and get right on that this guy's going to be a dominant number one scoring bandwagon. So that's kind of all I got. That's kind of all I got for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Kind of a draft-heavy podcast. Want to give a shout out to the Chicago Bulls. I've been accused many times of being a front office homer, and people saying that the Bulls must pay me to, you know, say all these nice things about them. Believe me, I don't have that much reach. But I now have to admit, the Bulls technically have paid me. They found my draft party on Real GM Forum, contacted me through one of their sources. They sent me 40 Chicago Bulls hats and a couple shirts for my girls to give away at my draft party. So if you're making it to the draft party, you'll get a Bulls hat. These are actually pretty sick hats. They left the price tags on them. They're like $35 hats from the official Bulls store. So they're not like the cheap ones. They're pretty sweet looking hats. So come on down. Only a couple spots left. I got to cut the party at 40 because my basement is what it is. It's not a conference center here. So we're gonna keep the list at 40. And I think we're at like 36, 37 people right now. So only a couple slots left. But if you're interested, you can hit me up on Twitter or send me an email at DougTonis@Comcast.net. And I will make sure I add you on to the list. That'll do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Hopefully I will talk to you guys soon, probably 2 weeks. I don't know if there's so much going on that we'll do an every other week show at this point. We'll be on the Big Red Bus later today as well. That'll probably be posted in a couple days.